You are listening to From Embers, a weekly show on CFRC 101.9 FM about anarchist and anti-authoritarian ideas and practice. We are broadcasting from the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples on land that has come to be called Kingston, Ontario, Canada, because of the thievery and brutality of the Canadian state and its empire-loving parents. From Embers is about fires, some real and some metaphorical. Fires started generations ago and tended to over the years. Little sparks all across this territory that we hope will grow, spread, and engulf the thieving state called Canada and the capitalist system that has plagued this land since the fur trade. As you likely know, Hamilton Pride this year was attacked by a group of far-right haters and defended by a group of queers and anarchists. If you've been listening to our show or paying attention to other anarchist media, you have probably already heard a bit about that day and about the multiple arrests of anarchists that have happened since. One person, Cedar, who was arrested for violating their parole by speaking publicly in defense of queer self-defense and against police, was recently released from jail amid an international campaign calling for their release and for all charges against those who defended Pride to be dropped. This week on From Embers, I sat down with Cedar and asked them about what it's like to be the subject of such a public support campaign. We also talked about jail, popularity, identity, and a bunch of other stuff. I super enjoyed this conversation, and I hope that you all will too, whether or not you've already been following this story as it unfolds.
Cedar, you're like out of jail here, and we're like sitting in this room full of like free Cedar swag. And last night we were at this really big party that seemed kind of like a fundraiser turned victory party for you. Can you sort of briefly explain how we got to this point over the last month, like in the shortest possible, like a quick summary of what's gone down?
So back on June 15th was kind of Hamilton Pride. It was just a festival in a park. And in the past couple of years, there's been this kind of group of kind of Christian hate preacher people coming around to just like harass people there and sometimes try to pick fights, but mostly just harass. But last year, things have like escalated kind of markedly. And then with just the kind of general rise of the right in Hamilton and these right-wing groups having kind of used Hamilton as like a bit of a contested space, like trying to have kind of semi-regular regional convergences of people here to like be in the streets together, there was sort of a sense that it might be like a little bit worse or something. So there was a desire to kind of come with more of a plan and try to keep people separate. So some people came with just like this enormous fabric curtain and tried to use it to like block off the kind of protesters from Pride. And yeah, things just like escalated almost immediately and just like turned into a fist fight that lasted about half an hour before the police showed up. And the police immediately just showed up and tried to go after the people who had been wearing like pink masks and trying to like defend Pride and like block out those protesters. So pretty immediately the police were quite partisan. They'd been asked not to be doing any community policing stuff at Pride that year. They'd tried to get a recruiting booth at the festival. Like in the past, they'd been quite like present and visible, but I guess this year they'd been asked not to attend in that capacity. And yeah, so almost immediately they started making these comments of being like, oh, this is what happens if like we're not invited or something. Like we can't protect you if you like don't give us exactly what we want in terms of like access to your space. So people were saying that at the time, like cops were saying that in the park, and then the chief of police went on the radio later and repeated it too. So it was like pretty clear from the beginning to try and instrumentalize this. But some people got like quite hurt, which was really intense, you know, like even in as much as we like understand the kind of conflict that we're engaged in, that like doing anti-fascism like specifically like involves physical risk. It's still just a really intense feeling to like watch like a dozen of your friends come home like hurt from pride and like just like see the blood on their faces and like mm-hmm. see things like that, you know, and it's just, yeah, it's just, like strong feeling. And I think that feeling was shared by like hundreds of people. Like a lot of people were directly impacted by the conflict that occurred, but then also I think just, yeah, just like a big kind of emotional shockwave through the city. So a couple days later, there was this public meeting that had been called by like the LGBTQ advisory committee of city council. So it's people who are like semi-picked by city council to like advise them on like anything to do with like queerness in the city. And that council had been sort of at odds with the city, and they called this meeting before Pride stuff happened in order to kind of get a position together on some of the things that they've been upset with city council about already. And then they just made space there for like a little bit of debrief around Pride, I guess, in the context kind of calling for a rally to follow up on it. So I went to the meeting along with a lot of other people. There were two cops there, both kind of high ups, like one deputy chief and the head of the hate crimes and extremism unit, so like Hamilton's political police. I wanted to go to that in order to just like speak and show support to the people who'd been at the park, because I hadn't been there that day because I was on parole at the time, mm-hmm. and it's just like really easy to get yourself in trouble when you're on parole. So I'd stayed away from it, but yeah, I just wanted to talk about self-defense, talk about like showing solidarity to people who take risks, talking about like being prepared to like use violence if you need to, and generally in this context of being like, well, if we want to exclude the police, these are actually conversations we like need to have, and I think we should exclude the cops, and I think these conversations are about the ways we're strong, you know, it's like about the things that we're capable of. And I think they're beautiful conversations, even if they're scary, you know? And then at the end, kind of tried to get the people in the room to throw out the cops who were there. Nobody, like, got up or did anything. People just, like, kind of yelled at them a lot, but they just stayed. And then the meeting just continued. It was, like, pretty orderly. A couple days after that, we started getting kind of hearing from people a little bit all over the city about police trying to track down and arrest various anarchists in connection to what had happened at Pride. And I didn't think it had anything to do with me because I hadn't been there. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of helping with some activities people were doing to oppose the repression, just kind of distributing leaflets, calling for people to like do whatever they could to put pressure on the police and city to like not go after Pride defenders. And made it to this like anti-hate rally that was going on and had time to give out two leaflets and then just like got surrounded by cops who like just took me away on a parole violation warrant. And they said at the time they had no idea what I was being arrested for, like what the alleged breach was, and I didn't figure it out until like several days later. And then I was just in this black hole of jail for a month, and I came back out, and yeah, it's been very like celebratory since then. Sometimes like a little embarrassing just to be like, oh, I'm surrounded by people who have my name on a t-shirt. But mostly like beautiful. And
that breach of parole was, you later found out, for the speech you gave at City Hall.
Correct, yeah. So yeah, I don't really understand how the process is supposed to work. I get the sense that no aspect of the process around parole worked like it was supposed to for me. The police were making public statements claiming that I had been at Pride and had been arrested for being a violent hooligan. And I think they were counting on my like kind of previous convictions for being a violent hooligan to carry that over. Like I was on parole from the Lock Street protests that had happened like in 2018, in which like a bunch of kind of fancy businesses and cars got smashed up. And so I think the police thought that like kind of like popular outrage around that would just like carry over and let them kind of do whatever they wanted. But so they were giving a false narrative publicly, but in the documents I was receiving inside, it only talked about the speech. Mm-hmm. And then only later did they add in and also this like other thing. But it took almost 2 weeks to find out what I was being accused of. And then got a parole hearing, and that took like the entire day. And then usually the parole board like gets back to you in half an hour, but yeah, this time they took 5 days to decide and gave like a negative ruling, basically said that people on parole have like no charter rights and mm-hmm. no ability to participate in public space.
But when you were first arrested, people were reporting that you were on a hunger strike. Mm-hmm. Is that true? And how did that begin and end?
Yeah, it wasn't super long. When I got arrested, I was just like pretty angry about what was happening. I'd been angry about stuff the entire week, and I'm just like, are you guys kidding? Like the first person you're arresting for this is like me, who wasn't there, and I mean, I fully support the people who were there. I fully support people throwing punches, like, all of these things. And I don't think anybody should get arrested for it. It was just annoying. And then also, like, doing it in the middle of this, like, hate rally, anti-hate rally, and just, like, in front of, like, all of these people. And it seemed like a pretty obvious act of intimidation, especially coming after their, like, you need us to exist type rhetoric. It's like, you need us, otherwise, like, we're just going to let fascists do whatever they want to. So, yeah, just as soon as I got picked up, I just told the jail that I was refusing food until somebody explained what the heck was going on. Mm-hmm. And it took, like, 3 days to get, like, a decent answer, so it wasn't the longest.
And then they did?
What eventually happened is just, like, a nice person in the jail just, like, turned their computer screen around so that I could see information I don't think I was fully entitled to. I think otherwise I would have been in the dark for a lot longer. So, in some ways, maybe being on strike was, like, hunger strike was, like, a bit successful for that. Just, because it does just make your demands, like, a little bit more urgent.
Mm-hmm. what's your sense of why you were targeted for this?
Yeah. I said a little bit just about kind of having that criminal record for, like, I also was convicted of stuff for, like, the G20 protests in 2010. Had, like, another conviction for, like, a rowdy situation that occurred in the court one time. So I think partly it's just, it's, like, easy for them to make that sort of narrative, right? And most of my past convictions are related to, like, speech in kind of a broad sense. Mm-hmm. That the G20 convictions were mostly for writing and distributing texts, mm-hmm. critiquing kind of their economic policies and calling for very specific protests. And then, yeah, in the Lock Street one, the thing I was ultimately convicted of doing was for, like, distributing leaflets, promoting a demonstration, and then being present at the demonstration. So I think they're just like, well, this clearly works, you know? Like, you can actually just, like...
a serial leafletter.
Yeah. yeah, serial instigator. so I think it's partly that. And then partly also, like, they arrested after I was arrested about a week later, they picked up a handful of other people. I think it was 5 people who have charges in total, 3 of them for Pride stuff. And all but one, I guess so, two, all but one of the people who have Pride charges were for various kinds of condition violation. So it's because of, like, the Lock Street thing and just, like, having... I know, it was pretty significant repression here. A lot of people are on conditions of various kinds. So I think they would just, like, wanted easy arrests in order to look like they're in charge of the situation, right? And I think they were getting critiqued a lot for being like, why didn't you intervene? Why did you wait half an hour? Like, oh my God, like, your job's to keep us safe. And so I think they kind of were in do something, do anything mode and just, like, went for the people they already didn't like who were easy to get.
Mm-hmm. What does it feel like to watch, like, what has been... I think actually, like, a pretty successful way of turning a situation like this around in the favor of, like, queers and anarchists. Mm-hmm. But what's it like to watch that from, like, inside jail?
I wasn't really sure which way things were gonna go. You know, like, I feel like I got picked up. I didn't get to talk to anybody for, like, several days, 4 or 5 days. So I had zero news. And the last thing I'd known was that, like, you know, cops are sniffing around, there's, like, multiple warrants, like, I have no idea, like, how bad things are going to be, we didn't know what the charges were. And then when I finally did get news, people are just like, I can't even describe to you what's going on here, we've never seen anything like it. There's just, like, hundreds and hundreds of people who, like, feel directly impacted by this, and they're, like, pushing this, like, really intense, like, anti-police line. It's not just, like, critiquing your arrest, it's become this, like, much larger kind of analysis of the role of police in society, what we can expect from them, and just, like, yeah, people are really pushing towards the kind of inevitable question of, like, yeah, how to take care of yourselves. It felt amazing. Like, I felt like I was just, like, floating afterwards as I, like, went back to SIG. but because I feel like usually, like, I don't know, we kind of got thick skin in this town, you know, you get used to being hated in certain ways, and you just keep doing the things you're doing that you think are right, and you talk them through, of course, and, like, analyze them and be self-critical, but, like, usually it's not super about, like, public opinion or, like, being most popular or something, and it's just interesting when you just, like, continue sticking to your guns in certain ways that just, like, sometimes you end up in situations that do, like, resonate way more widely, which I think is, like, was really, it felt really good to remember, it felt really good to see just people having, like, good reflexes outside about just, like, not forgetting the folks who are inside and using repression as a chance to push harder and to, like, escalate things and to, like, broaden the conflict and, like, show the ways more people are implicated or something. Mm-hmm. Just going, like, way beyond support.
Mm-hmm. This isn't your first time in Ontario Provincial Jail.
True.
Do you mind talking a little bit about what things are like inside right now? Yeah. Like, can you sort of, like, describe what the conditions are like in Vanier right now, what the deal is in there, any, like, interesting stories you've got from this stint or the past one?
All right. Yeah, so the last couple times I've been in women's prison, because a few years ago the law changed, I guess, at a federal level, just to make it so people can't be discriminated against on the basis of gender identity. So one of the consequences of that is that now they will stick trans people in the jail of their choice, which is just like a weird situation where it's just like, can your like identity be expressed through a prison uniform? Can you choose which person is going to like strip search you or like watch you on camera if you get like thrown in seg or something like that? Does that actually like affirm you in any way? And it's just like, and is the fact of like adding a couple more boxes to the form of when people are going through their intake about like what their pronouns are or something like that, and like sure, it feels good to not just be getting like wantonly disrespected or something, or like put in situations that are like more unsafe, but like at the same time, it just is like such a false victory. It like really demonstrates like the serious limitations of like going through the state for these things and just like going on the state to like grant you respect and to tell you within what limits it can be done. This is just like, well, like I don't know, like I'd always just people that may be like, oh, how do you identify? And I not want to answer. And then people would be like, actually, you can't leave until you finish all these boxes. You know, like, I'm just like, I just want to go to sleep. It's been a terrible day. And they're just like, no, we have so many boxes about you, about, like, gender we have to go through to make sure we, like, respect all of your very special, important rights, you know? And just, like, I don't know, what if you can't express your gender identity without a pickaxe? What if you, like, can't express it, like, between walls at all or in a world that contains prisons at all, even if you're not inside them and never will be? Yeah, I think it's just like a good reminder to just like go further around these questions than like some of these like inclusion politics, because like being fully included in a prison is still garbage.
Is that policy, is that full inclusion now? Like, is it when you're given that choice, when you were given that choice, like which jail should we put you in? Were you aware that you would be in general population?
No, when I first got arrested for luxury stuff, I'd been aware that the law changed around where people would end up. I didn't really have a sense of what that looked like. At first they like stuck me in the men's side and just like immediately had like a bunch of dudes call me their girlfriend, and I think the guard saw this and was like, oh my god, and just like took me back out again. And in our local jail, I just end up in segregation all the time because it's like, there's like a few different reasons we can imagine for this. Like the reason it seems most obvious is that jail is like super crowded and like filthy and violent, and they just like don't want them being on ranges there for some reason, because they just like, oh, you like have to have a cell to yourself, and like we don't want to waste a full cell for one person. So I just end up doing a lot of time in seg when I'm in that jail. But yeah, and the kind of the Vanier is in the kind of more regional correctional center where sentenced people get sent from Hamilton. And there it's more like set up to deal with that stuff. They've got like way more like training and resources for that. And so in practice, like most kind of like genderqueer and trans people like end up getting transferred there at some point. And yeah, I didn't expect to end up just fully on a range of people. And I wasn't sure how I would feel about it, because I think like, I don't know, I want to see how like other queer people might feel in those situations. But for me, I just like don't want to make people's time harder through my presence or something like that, and don't want to like, yeah, just like make people uncomfortable or something, you know, because like people are already in a situation where they have like no control over their space and like very little control over their person, and people have like tons of trauma, you know. And it's just like, yeah, I don't really feel like my like so-called rights get to like trauma how people are feeling, actually, like even though like, yeah, but in the end it was actually just completely fine. Like I've almost never been in like a more queer friendly space than that it wasn't like an explicitly queer space, like, yeah, kind of surprising, but.
Were there other, like, queer and trans people around on your ranges?
Yeah, I had, like, cellmates for, like, some periods of time, like, other trans women or whatever. I take the trans woman box when I'm in jail, even though it's not really words that I use for myself, because I guess, like, it's weird, but I feel like gender is the thing that, like, gets done to you, and if you're getting the, like, trans woman experience in jail, then I guess that's what you are. Yeah, there's definitely a good, like, a large number of other, like, trans people who end up incarcerated, and a lot of them still end up in SAG. I think, I don't fully understand, I couldn't get straight answers about this, but it seems like most trans men, if not all, are still ending up in women's prison, and end up doing a lot of time in SAG if they are willing to stop taking testosterone while they're there. I'm not entirely sure if that's, like, a policy or, like, what's going on, but it just is, like, what I was able to, like, observe.
What else have you observed about, like, women's jail? Like, what's the culture like inside?
Yeah, I mean, I've done time in both, like, men and women's prisons at this point, and, like, the biggest difference is how hands-on the guards feel entitled to be, and, like, how present they are in your life in women's prison. Just, like when I was in the men's side, like, I've done kind of equal amounts of time in each. I never once saw the guards intervene in, like, a fight or come on the range to, like, discipline people, really, or something like that. Like, never. Like, people could just be getting, like, the crap kicked out of them, like, right in the middle of the range and, like, under the guard's nose, and they just, like, would often not do anything and just, like, wait until later, and then once people are in their cells, like, maybe go and deal with it, maybe, you know? Whereas here, it's, like, literally, people raise their voices, there's immediately guards on the range. Yeah, so I feel like there is this kind of more hands-on, like, soft power type control, just feeling like, oh, guards are, like, on first-name basis with, like, all these prisoners and feel really entitled to, like, chat with them and, like, are just kind of always in your space, you know? And so just, like, cultivating, like, a certain amount of, like, hostility towards that from, like, among prisoners just, like, felt, like, necessary or something, and it, like, varies from person to person, but, like, yeah, because it just takes away, like, even more of your autonomy if you were, like, expected to have a friendly relationship with these people, you know? And it's just, like, it's not that they're, like, horrible individuals, they're doing a horrible function and you have to, like, defend yourself from it. Which is just, like, harder to do, it's, like, harder sell in, like, the women's prison, for sure. And another one I found is just, like, on the whole, people have, like, way less support and are often, like, way more marginalized. Even on the men's side, which is already, like, pretty intense there, but just, like, oftentimes on the men's side, like, the men would have, like, at least one person who could, like, they could call, who would, like, put money on the canteen for them, like, things like that, and it's usually, like, the girlfriend or the mom or something like that. But on the women's side, it's, like, no, mom's in jail now. You know, like, the person who would have been there for you is, like, you. And so people just, like, have nothing, and because of the way the phones and stuff are set up, you need to, like, have somebody outside doing organizing, or else you can't phone anywhere. Like, the phones can only make calls to landlines, so, like, you can't even call your lawyer, you know, if you don't have somebody on the other side, like, helping connect the call or, like, signing you up for a service. Yeah, so people end up therefore with, like, way worse results through court tier. It's like you see people just, like, getting dragged through, like, again and again, just getting completely, like, railroaded into more jail time and, like, more convictions, because you just, like, if you don't have people you trust outside, it's, like, you can't fight charges from jail, so.
And you think that's because of, like, basically just patriarchy on the outside, more than, like, the system being, like, composed differently? Like, presumably that same phone system exists on the men's side in jail.
Totally, and I think it's one of those ways that like, equal treatment in an unjust system reproduces injustice, right? And yeah, I feel like both of those things are, like, examples of patriarchy. Like, there's the way that, like, the phone is, like, more violent in the women's prison than the men's prison, and just, yeah, and then it's, like, the guards are, like, less likely to, like, rough you up, although that, like, definitely did happen.
Mm-hmm.
Not to me, but, like, to people around me. That, like, yeah, the kinds of, like, control and, like, humiliation and stuff like that are more intense, too, you know? And it made me think about, after the G20, like, one person put out, like, a really thoughtful paper about just, like, the way that repression was gendered and, like, the way the police felt entitled to, like, treat people, and that just, like, people they identified as men were, like, way more likely to, like, get beat up, to, like, experience, like, these various forms of, like, physical harm, whereas, like, for the women, they tended to use more or less humiliation. There's, like, examples of, like, somewhat sexualized public shaming that occurred, or, like, threatening to, like, misgender people and put them in, like, the wrong sections, or, like, things like that, you know? So it's more or less, like, veiled rape threats. And I feel like that holds true, like, inside the prisons as well. It's just, like, the forms of social control and violence that they see different bodies as, like, deserving to be subjected to, or that they consider more effective or necessary against different bodies is, like, very apparent or something. It's just, like, yeah, like I was saying before, I feel like gender is a thing that gets done to you, right? And it's, like, a thing that the state does to us, that capitalism does to us, that, like, social pressure does to us. And in prison, it's really obvious just the way that, like, what they call women is, like, an other within the system. And it's just, like, a cast of people who, like, requires a certain form of special treatment. and they get reproduced as women through the forms of violence that are reserved for them, right? And through their experience of the institution and those ideas of gender get like pumped back out into the world and strung on the inside too, right? Like by privileging like physical violence and like aggression and like kind of these rigid hierarchies that the guards like encourage among prisoners and stuff. And it's just like pumping the worst forms of masculinity back out to communities as well. So like, yeah, so I feel like there is this like really intense interplay between the form of violence that is like prison and the form of violence that is gender. And that like the one really just, they each feed into each other.
So you've been jailed basically like for the G20, for Lock Street, and now for this Pride thing.
Yeah.
In each case, how did your fellow prisoners react to your alleged crime?
Oh my gosh, yeah, that's a good question. I think there's often like curiosity. And it depends on how much like people have been paying attention. Like all of these things were in the media really intensely while I was there. So people were like already like talking about it. Like for the G20 when we first got locked up, like there was a huge disruption inside the jail. Like they'd moved people around like to free up entire like in whole units, like 5 or 6 ranges to just like hold all the like protesters that they were collecting. So they arrested 1,200 people, right, and like held hundreds of them for bail. And so by the time like people came back, there was like a lot of different feelings about it. Some of the most challenging aspects, it wasn't so much selling on the politics, because it's actually like really not hard to like sell people on like why maybe the state is like bad for you, or like it's, or maybe like why cops or prisons are like do way more harm than good. not a very hard sell.
Mm-hmm.
Or like why like the richer parasites or something. The harder part was explaining kind of anarchist practices of solidarity that would result, and just like kind of gives you like a special place within prison. Because like again, like usually people are lucky if they have one support person on the outside, and then like, and then if you're like the person who's in there and you've got like 100 masked up people coming and setting off fireworks at the jail, and like you've always got like tons of mail, like hundreds and hundreds of letters one of the people might get to in a year. I feel like it becomes a conversation about just like where that comes from, right? And which is an interesting conversation actually, and like the best way I've found to have it is just to talk about like how important it is to show support for people from inside and to like politicize it and not like forget about them, you know, and to recognize it's not just that person, it's like the institution as a whole. And so like anarchists in this area have this like long practice of doing nice demonstrations at prisons, of like responding to like things that are happening in the jail, like whether the guards are doing like work stoppages or whether there's like, I don't know, like the heat is out in a jail or something. So at least like in our local jail especially, like people there know who the anarchists are and have like some idea of what we think, you know. So like it's relatively like, I think that makes things like a little bit better, makes the conversation a little bit easier. Yeah, because otherwise the social pressure inside prison can be a lot. Because like oftentimes you're really crowded in like a really confined space, and nothing changes from day to day except for people, right? So people really scrutinize each other, and if you're like a weirdo, that's like a thing that you need to explain, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But also meant like, I feel like there's then this kind of class system that exists within the prison, and I found usually because of the things that I'm in for, I end up like, or maybe just because of how I like come off talking to people, ended up with like the more like people who are organized criminals or something like that, which is chill. It's like interesting chats. It's good to hear about other people's hustles.
I was gonna ask you next about like what the impact of that, all that support is for you as a prisoner. Like what kind of dynamics does that create between you and people on your range that you're getting like so much support and attention when they might not be getting any? Is there like, do you think people generally feel like resentment about that, or is it like?
I think there's like moments where it happens. I think you're like a curiosity though.
Okay.
And like a story that people then get to tell or something. And yeah, I think there's some moments like that. I think like the hardest moments are when there's solidarity that's like a bit more militant, like demonstrations and stuff that like have ripples inside the jail, like people getting like locked down or like things like that. Or like, yeah, there's a demo outside, it feels important to like make noise and like bang back and that kind of thing, which sometimes people like really don't want happening around them. So just having to like make the case for that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, definitely a bit of an attraction.
Do you feel like there's any like opportunities that presents? Like, do you ever get to share all the cool stuff you get, or like help people inside through that network at
for
all?
Sure.
Like, is there like, are there ways to make that somewhat less unequal on the inside?
Yeah, you could try to. I think like especially helping with the phone is big, right? Because like the like everybody's just like landing there and can't contact anybody who knows where they are. Like the phones literally don't work for anything. So if you can get calls out, that's like huge for people to like be able to set up like the odd time when you can relay a call to someone they want to talk to, or even like I would do a lot of just like text messaging for people, of just like calling a friend and getting them, being like, okay, I'm gonna read you off this list of texts that people need you to send, and mostly it's all just like urgent stuff, like please like pay my rent, please feed my dog, like show up to court, I need you to bail me out, type things, you know. And it's just like you can see it make a difference. Like, you can see people like get out of jail or like have fewer negative consequences. So it's like definitely worth doing, even though sometimes it's tiring because like the amount of need is like super high, and just ending up working as like some sort of like, I don't know, telephone operator or like social worker on your range is like not what you want.
Do you think people like perceive you as like separate or different because of the like political nature of your crime, because of all that support? Like, does it feel like they're a community and you're aside from that? Or do you feel like you're kind of just, like, another regular prisoner on the range?
I mean, there's an extent to which you're just another person on the range. There's an extent to which people are like, oh, you're not, like, a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just, like, and this might be more or less true for, like, different folks, you know, but it's just, I would often be, like, the only person there who, like, doesn't have, like, serious addictions or something.
Yeah.
Or I'd be, like, sometimes the only person there who, like, doesn't primarily make their money through crime or something. And, like, that is just, like, a real difference in, like, experience or something, and it does, like, set you apart more than, like, the support and stuff does. You know, it's, like, almost the support. Like, there's just, like, a whole range of things that, like, make you a weirdo. But I don't know, at the same time, it's just, like, people are actually pretty understanding and accepting of each other, I found, on, like, both men and women's prisons, that people, like, there's often this, like, level of hostility you have to get through at first, right? So it's often the first couple days, or if things are going to go bad, they're going to go bad, like, right away. But I feel like after that point, people actually, like, take time to, like, get to know each other and, like, want to talk about their experience, and, like, telling stories is, like, a way you pass the time, you know? It's only so much, like, Dr. Phil you want to watch.
This time around, this last time, there was, like, this whole, especially at first, kind of innocence narrative that was true,
right,
happening,
yeah,
because you literally were not at Pride.
Right.
Do you think that that made a difference? Like, do people who are criminals or being accused of being criminals, like, care if you're guilty or innocent of the thing that you did or didn't do?
I mean, it's a weird aspect is that, like, almost everybody who's incarcerated in Ontario is, like, not yet guilty.
That's
the thing that they're in jail for. Like, everybody does their time in advance, right? So I feel like that aspect really didn't matter very much inside. And I feel like people have actually dealt with that really well here too, politically. Like, one of the nice things since getting out has just been, like, having a lot of appreciation for my friends who are, like, really smart and eloquent. And I just feel so grateful to, like, be around people where we've just, like, put time into, like, getting our ideas on the same page and just, like, anything that I might have wanted to say, like, got said. And that, like, yeah, that, like, nobody ever said, like, Cedar wasn't there without also saying, and we fully support the people who were there, and we fully support the most unpopular of the actions that happened that day, you know, and just, like, be really blanket and not make any separations between people. But it's not that unusual that people are in jail for things that didn't happen, and that, like, then the process of being incarcerated leads people to just, like, plead guilty to those things, because it's just, like, if you're doing your time anyway, like, you often get out of jail faster if you say you did it. Set fire to the
room! You're listening to From Embers on CFRC 101.9 FM, or maybe the podcast edition of From Embers on your phone or computer. This week, we're speaking to Cedar of hashtag Free Cedar Fame about Hamilton Pride, queer self-defense, prisoner support, being a hashtag, and whether it's a good idea to try to be popular. As always, the best way to reach us at From Embers is our email address, FromEmbers@riseup.net. Please, please, please send feedback, show ideas, whatever you feel like to us that way. Thanks a lot for listening, and now back to my chat with Cedar.
After you were arrested, this whole campaign emerged. There was, like, an International Day of Action. There were tons of protests here in Hamilton. There's a hashtag Free Cedar, that's just, like, free you. A lot of the focus has actually been on you personally, although not exclusively at all. How do you feel about that? What do you think about that?
It's, like, oh, I don't know, it's a really weird place to be in. I feel like, I feel like I've got a politic in my life that I always tried to, like, act on, I guess, until this, like, last little while, about being anonymous, not just for security reasons, although it's like really important because we do deal with like a lot of repression. But also just like for political reasons that we actually don't want to like produce kind of like little movement celebrities that we don't want. People whose like job is to have opinions or something, or like who's, I don't know. It feels like just a dynamic that we just don't desire, you know? And the exception often is around repression because it's understandable to like focus things around the people who are being particularly targeted in order to like try to keep them safer. So it kind of like kind of lead to a thing where like the anarchist celebrities end up being the anarchist prisoners. And there's reasons why people don't like that so much or try to like limit it. I feel like in this case it was not primarily a thing that like came from people doing the support stuff. It was really done by like media and then like spread really quickly among people who like aren't close to me or something. And then folks kind of just like went with it to a certain extent. Mostly I feel like it's a weird situation to be in. It's a weird place to be in. I look forward to it kind of blowing over. At the same time, I feel like it's important just to like have gratitude, you know, and even if it's like awkward or like not like the most perfect political thing or something, it's still just like people showing support for folks facing repression. Super important. Mm-hmm. You know, like we don't have very much if we don't have that. And this time, like hundreds of random people felt like invested in that.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that shows to other people who like, there's a lot of fear around still. Like even though people are being way braver than they have in the past, like get a lot of people who've like, not a lot, I mean, had a handful of people who talk to me who are like scared to go to the tower, like our local social space, because they're just like, well, what if the police see me going there? Or like something like that. You know, and I think, you know, you can talk that through and be like, you're probably going to be fine. but at the same time, I think when people, I'm not sure which way it goes more. I think seeing somebody get arrested for like giving a speech is like, has an intense chilling effect. But at the same time, seeing people who get arrested, like be really intensely supported and like both kind of like emotionally and like materially, hopefully helps it feel more possible to be brave.
Did you have any say in how that campaign went? Was there, like, consultation happening back and forth? Were you, like, aware that someone was going to make you a hashtag?
No, I did not know. I did not know before it happened. And, yeah, which is totally understandable, because, like, for a lot of the time I had no access to communication.
Mm-hmm.
And another part of the time I had heavily surveilled communication. So, like, yeah, checking in with me before doing things would not have been possible or a good idea. And like I said, I just like trust. I trust the people out here, like do the right thing. I feel like people had really good reads on the situation and just like actually made really interesting calls that were like not calls that I would have made. I feel like sometimes I've been in this town a long time, I get kind of stuck in my ways about what I think is possible and what isn't. And we were clearly in a situation that was like not like anything we've really experienced before, where like a lot more is possible. And so I don't really feel like I would have even had very much to contribute. Like I feel like I would have fallen back on the kinds of anti-repression reflexes that were more useful around Lock Street when just, like, everyone hates you. Like, that's, like, more straightforward because you're just trying to, like, continue to exist.
Mm-hmm. What do you think are the, like, main differences between those two strategies? Like, why do things look so different now versus around Lock Street?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's both situations, the thing they have in common is that Hamilton is a city that has really intense reactions. I feel like just in Canadian society in general, there's this like layer of like being intensely passive, which is like super duper passive. But that if somebody manages to like punch through that passivity, then like the reaction is just like way overblown, right? And partly it's because like there aren't really social movements here, and the ones that do exist like aren't super combative. So people kind of like aren't used to this stuff and get like flustered really easily. So in some ways, I feel like the two things are similar. That just like you had tons and tons of random Hamiltonians who suddenly felt really invested in a thing. For the Lock Street one, they suddenly felt really invested in like doxing us and threatening us and like showing support to like business owners, and like even for some of them ending up in rallies with fascists because everybody just hates those other guys who don't like donuts. But this time, I don't know. I think people just are more upset around, like, you know, Nazis punching queers than they are around gentrification or something, even though I'd say that, like, the gentrification is, like, a way bigger threat and, like, a way more intense form of violence, even against queers, you know? But, yeah, it just, like, resonated with people in a way that caused that overreaction to be, like, super sympathetic, which, like, created opportunities that didn't exist the other time, right? Like, I feel like it wasn't really, like, a strategic choice for Lockstreet, like, to, like, react in ways that were, like, principled. Mm-hmm. But it didn't feel like there was a ton of, like, options. It felt like here are, like, the right things to be doing here that are, like, in line with our values. We have to, like, think about it to get there. But, like, I feel like here it seems like the doors, like, blew wide open and people were suddenly, like, well, we can do, like, any number of things, and, like, a lot of those things will be unpredictable because we aren't used to being able to get 200 people out to, like, a demo on 5 hours notice or something, but, like, right now we can. Mm-hmm. Which is exciting, and, like, everybody knows it's not going to last forever, so it's a question of just, like, well, what kinds of experiences can you create for people that, like, cause them to see possibility differently in their lives, and how can you, like, consolidate the kinds of, like, gains and connections and, like, strength that you get during those times? What can you actually carry away with you once the wave subsides?
Do you think that those people, all those Hamiltonians, know that you're the same people that they were totally vilifying? Like, just, it's only a year ago, right?
Yeah. Like, I think the people know it's, like, literally the same people. Like, because the police made a big deal out of me being the same person.
Yeah.
And then the general reaction of people was, like, we don't care, this is completely different. And then, yeah, there's funny things happening. I can see these, like, messages on social media of people being, like, my car got smashed during Lockstreet. This is still going too far. Free Cedar. Which is, like...
And then, do you think... I think, like, in a certain sense, because of how the parole system works, like, you're actually still being repressed for Lockstreet.
Yeah.
Kind of primarily, right? Like, this wouldn't be happening to you if it weren't for that.
No.
Do you think people understand that aspect, like, that nuance?
No.
Like, that it's actually, like, the parole system that's happening here?
Yeah, like, I think that's the thing that could have been communicated around more. That, like... this is, like, a continuity with that, because, like, they wouldn't, like, the police here would not have been able to arrest so many people
mm-hmm.
without the repression they still had in place from Lockstreet, right, of having people in conditions. They certainly wouldn't have been able to just, like, try to silence somebody who they disagree with if that person hadn't been on parole.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like, the parole system, I feel like people should know more about it, because there's, like, lots of people in this country who are, like, on various kinds of, like, judicial control release, but, like, parole specifically, where you just, like, it's just entirely in the discretion of, like, a couple of bureaucrats or something about, like, what happens to you and, like, how much freedom you have. So, like, really, like, for me to end up in jail for a month, all it took was, like, the police making one phone call, you know? And there's no process, like, there's no trial, you don't have access to the courts, you know? Like, you go in front of a tribunal that, like, again, like, has essentially an ability to just, like, make any call it wants to. Like, my lawyer got really into our hearing and, like, presented me more evidence than people usually do and made, like, really complex, like, kind of, like, charter arguments around these issues, and the parole board will just respond and be like, that was all very interesting, and if it matters, the perception of a risk that the peace would be disturbed is, like, the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And we feel like that bar's been met. So parolees don't have any rights to these things anyway, so it's just be super duper good and don't be unlucky.
Yeah. Your sentence was going to be up anyway, like, fairly soon, right? Like, it wouldn't have been possible to jail you for that breach for more than, like,
a couple of months. That's right.
Do you think that the intention or strategy of, like, making, like, a campaign out of freeing you is, like, more about actually freeing you or more about, like, building that momentum around, like, queer solidarity for some kind of other reason that actually primarily benefits people on the outside?
I mean, I think it's definitely the latter. Like, you put it really well around, like, yeah, like, the amount of good that could be done to me was, like, very limited, you know? But the importance in, like, combating fear and continuing to push forward, like, a discourse of self-defense and, like, wrecking the police's strategy of, like, using what happened at Pride and, like, the violence there to, like, wiggle their way back in.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was all really important. And, yeah, and sometimes, like, for better or for worse, like, personal stories are more persuasive, right? And so I think, like, having an individual whose kind of example can be used to, like, illustrate some of those points about just, like, why you can't just, like, have cops at your events and, like, why, like, what, yeah, like, what the actual consequences of that are. Yeah, it's just, like, much more eloquent than, like, making it theoretically or, yeah, I feel like more movement happened on those issues in, like, 3 weeks and has happened in many years.
Mm-hmm. Like, is that an intentional strategy, though, or?
I think it was intentional. I think, like, there was a hope that it would influence, like, parole stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's possible it did. Like, I got inexplicably released, like, 2 weeks early, like, with 24 hours notice. Again, they just were like, you're getting out tomorrow. It's not really clear what happened. It's, like, but it was not what the parole board decided, as far as I know. So, who knows? Maybe it did help me get it, really.
The last time you got arrested for that anti-gentrification demonstration on Lock Street, anarchists in Hamilton seemed, like, extremely unpopular, as you've mentioned. Now it seems like you guys are, like, the coolest kids in town. Like, every liberal loves you.
It'll wear off.
Do you prefer being popular or being unpopular?
I prefer being honest and clear about our ideas. And I feel like we put a lot of effort into, like, having integrity in those ways and, like, saying what we actually think. And I think people didn't pander to the popularity, really. I think people continued to say stuff that I think people would, that, like, a lot of those, like, liberals who are coming out would find shocking if they paid more attention to it or something. But I think it's always a thing where people get involved in stuff for their own reasons, right? And I think just, like, the situation and, like, people getting beat up at Pride that spoke to a lot of folks in certain ways. It's definitely easier when people like you. Definitely makes your, like, lives easier. Like, I'm glad I'm, like, when I walk down the street, I have people being like, can I give you a hug? Instead of, like, having people yell threats or something. It's just nicer.
Are there lessons that you would take from that difference in terms of practice, like what to do or no?
I don't think being popular is a worthwhile goal in itself. I don't think influencing, like, public opinion actually, like, gets you very much. Because I think, like, most people, like, their views change all the time and have no consequences in action, you know? Like, I'd rather build strong relationships with people whose, like, commitments are similar to mine and, like, develop our kind of ideas together, you know? I'd rather be aware of popular among the people I trust than, like, among random strangers, you know? So, yeah, it feels more important to just, like, be clear about your politics and try to be consistent with them. Like, I feel like we could have been more popular on the Long Street thing if we'd, like, acted differently, right? I think, like, a lot of the attacks started happening when people started putting up public statements being like, we fully support what happened. And I think that just, like, produced this, like, state of exception around us in which, like, the police and, like, the far right, and we're just, like, allowed to do stuff to us that they wouldn't be able to get away with otherwise, you know? And then it just, like, became a question of being, like, no, backing down and, like, holding on to those things because it was the right thing to do. Yeah. And I don't know, this time around, like, the same orientation has just a different result and feelings. So, you know, so I'm sure next time will be different.
What are some lessons that you've learned from the situation? Like, what if you're popular again someday? Are there things that you think should be done the same or differently? Like, what are your take-homes?
It feels soon for me for lessons. Like, I kind of just, like, a little over a week ago and just been, like, catching up on what people have been doing.
Mm-hmm.
I think just, like, one thing that comes to mind is that, like, things move slow for really long periods of time, you know? Like, I feel like in Hamilton, we often feel... Yeah, often, I don't know, it feels like trying to start a fire with, like, no wood or something like that. Like, you just... You try things, and just, like, nothing works. And things, if they build at all, they build really slowly. But then there are moments that do come along, sooner or later, that where things, like, speed up. And suddenly things change really quickly, and, like, a lot of them is possible. But your ability to, like, influence those moments and to, like, take advantage of them and, like, have them be interesting or last longer is, like, based on the preparations you made during the slow periods, right? So it's... moments where it's like, wow, it's great that the tower exists. It's great that there's, like, a physical space to, like, have meetings and to, like, welcome people and to, like, put forward certain ideas. It's great that space has, like, clear politics. It's great that it's got, like, a couple dozen people around it who, like, put years into, like, yeah, building up, like, a good analysis, figuring out how to communicate it. It's great that, like, we have autonomous media platforms like North Shore where stuff can be communicated about, like, anonymously and safely and where people can, like, yeah, actually have those kinds of conversations, you know? And... yeah, it's great that we have these, like, networks of people who are ready to spring into action, like, have good skills and, like, reflexes. It's great that we know how to, like, support prisoners. Yeah, I feel like it would have been way less possible to make of the situation what people have made of it if that hadn't been the case, you know? And then it would have just been, like, some people got beat up at, like, a Pride event or something instead of this, like, whole other situation.
Mm-hmm. So, Cedar... is free. The hashtag should be retired.
New consistent level of freedom.
What do you think happens to all that momentum? Like, where can that go now that, I mean, obviously there are still charges.
That's right.
And they're, but I think.
Pivoting to drop the charges, I think, is
that. But I think that, like, perhaps that will have less power as, like, a meme or a hashtag.
Yeah. Having somebody in jail is pretty powerful.
How do you think it's possible to, like, keep all that momentum going, partly to also drop the charges, but also just partly because, like, that momentum is positive. Like, it feels good to have people around who are, like, becoming radicalized by this moment even. Totally. Like, what are you going to do with that? Like, where does that go?
That's a great question. I'll be interested to see which way things go. I think the momentum won't continue. I think, like, we're already, like, past the crest, yeah. So I think just, like, asking a slightly different question, because I think until now people have been thinking, how do we make things, like, bigger? How do we stretch this situation? I think right now it's, like, things are closing back up again. And so it's a question of just, like, yeah, how do you carry as many things out of this moment as you can? You know, and, like, how do you take those, like, moments where people got radicalized and, like, were really brave and, like, turn that into, like, a longer-lasting relationship? How do you encourage people who, like, because tons of people were organizing autonomous actions around, too, like, people were just making their own posters and, like, putting them up, or, like, being little crews in demos, or, like, I don't know, just doing stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is such a strength, if you actually have, like, different crews of people who, like, organize around action for their own reasons, you know? Just, like, how do you encourage people to keep doing that? Maybe I'm too pessimistic, and, like I said, I just got out, and so I don't really know what's possible right now, but yeah, I guess that's like something I'm bringing up with my pals, is just being like, you don't want to be the last person who still thinks that, like, things are going to keep going and keep growing, you know? You want to, like, kind of cash your chips.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because I think there's also, like, a lot of momentum, like, around the region, and specifically around, like, radical queer organizing because of this moment,
yeah.
Which is something that, like, I haven't really felt a lot of excitement about, like, in, like, at least a decade, probably more. Do you think that that specific kind of thing will or should continue? Like, do you think that, like, queer identity as, like, an aspect of this is, like, a useful point to continue with, like, a useful way to move forward? Like, do you think that, like, there will be a, like, radical queer movement that's, like, reinvigorated by this? And if it was, like, would that even be a good thing?
Yeah, I mean, it would be... I think it's good to have kind of radical political space interject themselves into, like, existing kind of, like, communities or something. Like, in as much as, like, the queer community is a real thing, it's good to, like, make that basis of unity a little bit stronger other than just, like, do, like, the same parties or something. Because I would really rather be... Like, I'm not the most interested in the queer community, actually. I'm interested in, like, sharing ideas with people, you know? And so I think just trying to... Yeah, that community becomes more interesting as much as it, like, has political development, you know? And so I think that'll be true for other people, too. Like, people get more invested in spaces that they feel like they've grown in.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see there being, like, they'd have having kind of a long tail of people who aren't ready to, like, go that political aspect again, and or who just, like, have felt strong in, like, certain ways that they don't want to give up. I think it's actually probably, like, really important too. Because there's been, like, a qualitative shift away from asking, like, the city and the police for things, like, around safety or inclusion, towards being like, we can't rely on them. We need to figure out if we want specific things around safety and inclusion. We need to figure out kind of how to do it ourselves and, like, make sure it happens ourselves. Yeah, I think just in general, like, there's a kind of a reactionary turn that's going on around us. And I think a lot of the gains that people have made, like, socially, are going to prove to be short-lived. It seems like, you know, it's, like, over racism happening in, like, mainstream politics to a degree that is maybe a little unusual for, like, the past couple decades. There's, like, coordinated attacks to, like, take away women's rights. And, like, I feel like, you know, the trans inclusion stuff is, like, 5 years old. You know, like, that's almost certainly going to get peeled back, right? In the same way that, like, a government can just come in and cancel, like, a 2-year-old free tuition bill, that, yeah, it's going to be really easy to just, like, wind up getting ticketed for using the wrong bathroom again. So I think, actually, like, our people's ability to, like, be free and be out is tied to their ability to, like, not trust the state's benevolence, because that is fickle.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for your time.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Awesome.
Oh. totalement. Dans les quartiers décondés de la métro, voire autrement pas mais aussi. Sachez que l'air est chargé d'électricité. Alors, pas de respect, pas de pitié, escomptez, vous aurez les regrets. Jamais par la répression, vous n'obtiendrez la paix. La paix, la paix de l'âme, le respect de l'homme. Mais cette notion d'humanisme n'existe plus quand il passe l'uniforme. Préférons au fond la forme, peur du hors norme. Pire encore, si dans leur manuel ta couleur n'est pas conforme. Véritable camp, camp organisé, hiérarchisé, protégé sous la tutelle des hautes autorités. Port d'armes autorisées malgré les valeurs énoncées. Comment peut-on prétendre défendre l'état quand on est soi-même en état d'ébriété avancée, souvent mentalement retardé. Le portrait type, le prototype du pauvre type. Voilà pourquoi dans l'Excel, ils excellent. Voilà pourquoi les insultes de plus qu'en passe les hirondelles. Pour notre part, ce ne sera pas. Mais un spécial nique ta mère de la part de la mère patrie du fils. Police, machine matrice, desserve les mandats. Par la machine sur laquelle je pisse. Les mandats, puis par la justice sur laquelle je pisse.
Aucune représentative de l'entière populace. Que dois-je attendre des maléfiques qui pour moi ne sont signes que d'emmerde. Regarde, je passe à côté de tranche de con, devient nerveux.
Oh, oh, contrôle de police, monsieur.
Systématique et la façon dont l'histoire se complique. Pas devant mes poches, plus me presse sans les balles. Ne m'accordant aucun reproche à part le fait de passer proche. Portant atteinte à leur gommage.
Traquer les keufs dans les couloirs du métro. Tels sont les rêves que fait la nuit, yo, idiot. Donne-moi les balles pour la police municipale. Donne-moi un flingue.
What's up, y'all? This is Mitch from the Red Strings and Maroons podcast. Each episode, we dig into the little-known histories of armed revolt and community defense against oppression in the so-called United States. We focus on helping curate an ongoing discussion surrounding firearms and the skills needed for defense from an anti-fascist and anti-authoritarian perspective. To listen to each episode, check us out on RedStringsAndMaroons.com, subscribe on iTunes, or check us out on the Channel Zero Network.